Hello and welcome to Real World HR, the podcast putting the human back into HR. I'm Louise Kennedy, an HR expert, chartered CIPD professional and founder of award-winning HR consultancy Oculus HR. In the Real World HR podcast, we focus on people and business, telling the stories that we've learned from and explaining the processes which have supported the solutions. In this episode, we're joined by Kimberly Catton, the co-founder of West Bar & Co., the brand that penetrates the beauty industry with a groundbreaking soap brows. Not only does West Bar & Co. specialise in crafting high-quality brows and beauty products, but it also expanded in reach to over 60 countries. Their products adorn the shelves of prestigious retailers such as Harrods, Liberty London and Urban Outfitters, gaining recognition in leading fashion publications. They've also graced the brows of celebrities. Kimberly's journey extends beyond West Bar & Co. and she recently founded SB1 Group. The venture aims to propel brands to new heights by leveraging the expertise of industry professionals. The team of experts at SB1 Group are dedicated to providing dynamic and targeted brand solutions that helps brands stand out in a crowded market. From brand and production concept to PR, shipping of the products, they've covered everything from concept to customer. Kimberly also owns WB Co Clinic, a luxury aesthetics clinic in Durham, offering a range of treatments to help clients on their journey with skin and ageing. Are you ready to step in the real world of HR? Thank you so much for coming along, Kimberly. You have so many things to talk about, but do you want to just tell me about kind of a little bit of intro, who you are, what it is that you do, and where you are at this moment in time?
So I always tell people I have had about 9 lives.
Okay.
I've done a lot, I think. Or people tell me I've done a lot. So yes, my background is very varied. So I have been a makeup artist. I've also been a nurse. I've also been an entrepreneur. So I've done quite a few things that I feel very much led me to the path that I'm on now.
Right.
So yeah, we started with West Bar & Co., which was an amazing journey that we went on with the brand. It very much scaled very quickly and propelled us into that cosmetic space, which is hard to get into.
Right.
We found ourselves as a very small fish in a very large pond.
Okay.
But definitely enjoyed that journey. And I think what we ended up doing was looking at what we'd achieved and then figured out, actually, we can do this for other brands as well, especially with the team that we'd built around us. And we were all very passionate about it. So we decided, okay, we create a group. And then from group now, we basically create other brands for people. Or if they already have a brand and they might be struggling, we'll try and propel them and elevate them in a direction that's going to give them a bit more success.
Okay. So backtracking there. So yeah. West Bar & Co. So that was the original soap brows.
Soap brows, right? Yeah, so it started with soap brows.
Okay. And that was an idea that you had on the back of being a makeup artist?
Yes. So I was working on set, TV and film mainly. Had some fun jobs doing that. And essentially just came up with, I mean, there was a problem in the industry that there was no product to solve eyebrows, would that were unruly.
Okay, unruly eyebrows.
When you're working on, I don't know, Game of Thrones, for example, like there's some of the brewly guys that are on there have brewly eyebrows and you might need to be able to tame them.
Yeah.
I really couldn't. There was literally nothing in my kit.
Yeah.
So I came up with the idea of soap brows just because it was a trick that they used to use back in the 50s. They used to use a bar of soap.
Mm-hmm.
It was an old Hollywood trick. I'm not insured, especially not on set. I'm definitely not insured to put a bar of soap on somebody's face.
Yeah.
Shut an entire production down if you, like, you know, mess up someone's face.
Mm-hmm.
So basically went back to my mum, who was already formulating, and came up with the idea of making it a registered cosmetic.
Right, okay.
So we looked at what that meant. She was already doing formulation, so mm-hmm. as you do, that's my family for you.
I was going to say, just happened to be doing formulation, or has she got some role?
It's my family are a bit of an entrepreneurial, we're kind of, yeah. There's a lot of us and we all do fun things. So
you've all created different businesses.
Yeah,
so your mum
yeah.
was already in that space.
So she was just enjoying herself, having a great time in the kitchen. And then I came in and did my little entrepreneur's wand thing. And,
and then so she said,
we can make this, we can do this, we'll make it work. Tested and trialed it, did loads of different versions of formulation, about 6 months. And then I basically gave it to some friends.
Right, okay.
Who were makeup artists. Really professional makeup artists who I really trusted, who were doing red carpet, TV, film,
mm-hmm.
fashion. And I gave it to them and I said, I just want feedback.
Yeah.
And the feedback came via the celebrities
because
they loved it so much. All of a sudden, the celebrities who they tried it on were like, I need that.
Okay.
I want that. And it just blew up from there.
Right. And were the celebrities then starting to talk about that, were they? They were talking about
Yes, and this product. Was in the days where the algorithm was nice.
Right.
The Instagram algorithm was lovely back then. So if you got a Beyoncé tag, that meant a million orders.
Right.
And it meant, it's not quite the same anymore, unfortunately, the way the algorithm works. But yeah, we kind of read this amazing wave where at the time, the brow categories for all kind of cosmetics companies were not really packed out enough. People weren't focusing enough on brows. There was one main leading cosmetics brand who were, but they had no competition.
Right.
So we kind of came in, and still to this day I'm baffled by the fact that we became their competition because they're a massive company.
They're a big company, yeah.
Yeah, $1 billion company, American.
That's surreal, isn't it,
very
from that
surreal.
Point? Yeah.
Very surreal.
And did you think in your mindset, I know you said you're a family of entrepreneurs, but did in your mindset you probably were too early in a business to think that that's where you were going?
I'm an ambitious girl.
But did you think you'd go there that fast?
No, that was the thing. So I was always quite ambitious. And that's what's nice about me and my mum, we're opposite people.
Yeah.
She keeps me grounded. And
you
I
keep
take
pushing
us,
her up.
Yeah, to the next step at all times. But yeah, it was very much surreal. For me, I'm not, because I've worked with celebrities on set and stuff before, every time there was a celebrity mentioned and the staff were all happy, I was like, who's the makeup artist?
Who put it on?
Yeah, I was like, really, because they were my idols. They were the people who I was really looking up to. And yeah, it's still surreal to know that some of them still use the product today and it's a staple in their kit. And I'm always a bit like, wow, that's really bizarre.
Yeah. Because as really you say, there's so much competition out there for makeup, isn't there? All you need to do is go into the local Fenix or John Lewis or wherever. There's so much competition out there, isn't
Well, the brow category blew up.
Yeah.
It just blew up.
Yeah.
It was all of a sudden like, oh, wow, people have recognised eyebrows. Remember the 90s?
Yeah.
When nobody had eyebrows.
Now people have got a complete different extremes,
I know, haven't they? Yeah. It's different shapes, different sizes, different styles.
Completely.
So, yeah, the brow category blew up and became really a new space for beauty. And we were there at the right time with the right product, with the right branding.
And did you feel like you were there just as, just
timing
before
was
that happened?
Everything for us. Yeah, everything.
So
everything.
When was that? Was that, because I'm just trying to think, would that be about 4 or 5 years?
It was 2016.
Right, okay. So quite about, about 7 years
ago. Yeah, 7 years
ago
or so, yeah.
Because then it has just grown and grown and grown, it's that just industry,
got,
hasn't it?
It's got mental. Like, yeah, it's got absolutely mental.
So that was the first thing that you did, and then you kind of you were then creating your own products, were you?
We extended the range to more skincare products, and everything that we did had a reason. Every product that we kind of brought out had a reason to be brought out. It wasn't like, oh, let's just do a lipstick.
Yeah,
it was, we're missing this in the industry, or we don't have this. And again, having that knowledge, I think, being a makeup artist, it was quite obvious to me.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's like a bit like insider knowledge, isn't it?
Totally.
Because, you know, unless you really knew the industry and you were using the products.
Well, unless you even spoke to actors, actresses and got their feedback.
Yeah.
What do they want? These are people who, they have makeup touch-ups, some of them for 13, 14 hours a day.
Right, okay.
Like they've got somebody at their face 13, 14 hours a day.
Right.
And then they've got their makeup taken off every night and then back on sometimes at 4 o'clock in the morning if they're there early.
Yeah.
So they've constantly got products on and off their face. They're the best people to ask, the best ones to ask. What do you think of this, this and this?
Yeah.
So they were my feedback family.
There's nothing better than that, is they kind of just go to the top with it.
No, it's interesting. We got a few emails from a few people, even early days, like Bill Nye loves the peppermint press prep mist and can he have some more? And I was like, Bill Nye? the guy from Love Actually. It's so bizarre.
Yeah.
What was the other one that we had? Oh, that guy from Taken.
Oh, Liam Neeson.
Liam Neeson wants some cleanser. And I was like, yeah, but can he do the voice thing? I need cleanser or I will find you. And I'm like, please.
If he does that, then we'll give him a free.
Yeah. And the makeup artist, a good friend of mine.
Right.
I was like, come on.
But they're big, aren't they? Like, they're from a status point of view of people recognising the products that you're delivering on.
Totally.
That is a massive achievement.
Totally, yeah. I mean, I know who they are, so that says something. Yeah. I'm not very good otherwise.
I know when you said that guy off there, I was thinking, oh,
I'm not good. I'm not good. But it's been an amazing journey with Westbarn, and I think what happened was we looked around and we saw what we'd created and the space that we'd created, and we kind of said, oh, look, there's so much scope here to do this for other people, and there's definitely a gap that other people can't get into this market. And I was constantly getting phone calls, I want to do this, but I don't know how to launch it, and shall we do this, and what's the best person to use for marketing for this, or can you help with the social media for this product launch, or whatever it was. So we set up SB1 Group.
Well, I was going to say that it's kind of fits in quite nicely, you know, kind of obviously on the back of what it is that you've already done. And as I say, I mean, a new business starts out and you go through that process, there's going to be lots of successes, but there's also the difficult times that come with
absolutely.
It as well, isn't it? And the kind of the complete up and down, which enables you then, as you say, to kind of take the best of what you've done.
Totally.
All your lessons learned to be able to then help and provide it to other people.
Oh, absolutely. We had a great time starting and setting up and
learning, really, I would imagine.
Totally.
Yeah.
But there was definitely quite a few pitfalls that I've chatted about before, one of them very recently. So when we did start Group, I had to make quite a lot of redundancies,
and
that was hideous.
Yeah,
but it's real HR. That's
it is. Yeah,
the top and bottom of it was the business had evolved to a different thing.
And I think, you know, in saying that, I think for me, obviously listening to you saying that, the importance is recognising that the business has changed and that actually you need to fundamentally change the structure of what it is.
It took me too long.
Yeah.
It took me too long. Totally honest. I wish I'd done it sooner.
Yeah.
And that's awful. But because of the culture that we'd bred, these people were like family to me.
Yeah.
And I was like, I can't. It was almost like I waited till I got to a point where I was ready to lose everything over losing the people.
Yeah.
Because I was just like, it was just too hard for me to do. And I'd bred this culture of family and it was really, really difficult.
Yeah.
Really difficult.
And I think any decision to exit anybody from a business, whether it's one person, whether it's three people, whether it's 20 people, however many, but I think as a small business owner, that's even more difficult because you know them, you know that they've just had a baby, or, you know, their wife's pregnant.
You know their dog, you know their...
You know everything about them and I think that's when it becomes kind of you're personally entwined, which makes those decisions harder. Which I think then do push the finances because people think, well, we'll hold off a little bit longer or we'll do this.
Yeah.
One of our clients a couple of weeks ago, they'd held off for 6 months and they were going to get an investment and all of a sudden it was like, we need to do the dismissal
today. That's exactly what we do.
It was kind of, and then all of a sudden we're kind of, well, did you know this was coming? Well, we potentially knew it was going to come, but we need to make that decision today.
Oh, it was a massive error on my part, if I'm totally honest, something I massively learned from that I should have done it sooner. I should have figured out different plans, or but I was just trying to save the entire... It was like everyone was in the boat. I was like, nope. No man is going down.
Yeah. And that's so difficult, isn't it?
It was really tough, really hard, but definitely needed. And then I think once that kind of dust had settled and everything, Group came out of all of that and we were just like, this is actually the future for us.
Yeah. And you know, it then becomes the right thing, doesn't it?
It was totally the right thing. Totally the right thing.
And in your situation, you've had to stop doing one thing to enable you to do something else as well.
Yeah,
and therefore,
yeah.
you know, the decisions have been...
Oh, absolutely.
Got good foundations on... Not always the decision that you wanted to make at the time.
No, no.
However, you've made something great out of the situation.
I mean, I think for us, we'd kind of built it up as well to a point where you have to look like, what's the personal goals? So for me, my very... original personal goals was I want to create a really nice place for people to work.
Right, okay.
And I did that.
Yeah.
And then once that was like tick done, having 2-3 years of that, I was like, okay, now what? Like, this is there. But is my job now for the rest of my life just to keep that space
ticking over?
And that ticking over, or is there something else that I need to get my teeth stuck into here?
Which is the entrepreneurial spirit,
and
you?
I can't deny that I do have that hunger to get my teeth stuck into projects.
Yeah, to do something different and to bring it on.
Yeah.
So obviously one of the hot topics that's talked around at the moment is culture. We call it kind of the culture challenge, so to speak.
Yeah.
You know, kind of what does a business do to make sure that it is a place that people want to turn up for work every day, and that because it has such a big impact as far as like sickness and retention rates and you know, the impact of people just turning up and they give more and the kind of the attitudes are better and the morale's better.
Yeah.
That's obviously been early doors, that's been a priority
totally,
for you.
Totally, massive priority.
So as you were setting your business up, were you very aware of what you wanted to create?
Very aware. From the very beginning, we even created, so the handbooks, while we did the handbooks, we created something called the talent book.
Right.
Which was entirely just my brain. And it took about 3 months to get it onto paper, and we used a professional psychologist to help try and get all of this kind of idea onto paper. But it was basically throughout the review, we would talk about how they were performing as a staff mm-hmm. member, but then we'd talk about untapped potential.
Right.
And I think that's something that I'm really passionate about. Mm-hmm. You can have somebody sat doing, I don't know, it might be fulfillment mm-hmm. in our case. So they're picking and packing parcels. They might also have a massive interest in photography outside of work that they don't talk about or they don't speak about. So my kind of focus was always to get everybody's untapped potential on the table. Okay. And sometimes they didn't know what that was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we had to explore that. So the talent book was all about exploring untapped potential.
Right.
So they had so many hours a week mm-hmm. that they would get to shadow somebody else. Right. Or they would get to go and work in another department, or they would get to upskill in different areas. And we had staff, probably 50% of the staff all changed jobs.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
Right, okay.
So what we brought them on for, uh-huh. they didn't stay in right. that job.
And did you provide training for people to yes. move into, as in yeah. somebody's, you know, followed someone, yeah. you know, fulfillment into PR
totally.
Or something.
Yeah.
And they've followed that path and thought, yeah. I really enjoy it. And, mm-hmm. and you then provided them.
So we trained the train them with whoever that expert was in that department.
Right. Uh-huh.
And they were the people who were kind of the experts were going, she's got talent for this. Mm-hmm. She's really good at this. Like, can yeah. we want her a few more days a week?
Yeah.
And everybody seemed to then feel like they were reaching their potential.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't feel like they were sat back and not being utilised. And I think that's, people want to feel like they're doing some good.
Yeah.
They want to come in and feel useful.
Yeah.
And I think that was a really nice way. However.
I was going to say, at this point, I love the idea, but now you just said however.
However. It works.
Right.
It works very, very well. And I would suggest it to more startups.
Mm-hmm.
You have to recognise when it's not going to work anymore.
Yeah.
When we got to a certain point and a certain level where those experts, you know, maybe needed a bit more hands-on straight another expert.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's when you have to go, okay, no, we need to hire somebody
yes,
in or, uh-huh. or headhunt somebody in.
Yeah. It's not just going to work from the people out within
no.
the organisation already.
No.
Yeah.
So I think that was quite easily recognised for us because we scaled so quickly.
Yeah.
The business did kind of grow very quick. So the needs, you know, kind of grew quicker than some of the skill.
Yeah.
If that mm-hmm. makes sense.
But I think it's about, I was just talking to someone about this morning, that from a skill set point of view, you need to make sure that you've got the right people at the right level within
oh, yeah.
the business, haven't you? So mm-hmm. as you're just talking about there, mm-hmm. someone who's maybe, we use PR for instance, you're someone who's junior at PR, mm-hmm. there's potentially a big gap between that person and the expert that's
absolutely.
There.
Absolutely.
And actually sometimes you need to bring in the expert.
So we did have to fill in
gap.
Some of those gaps.
Yeah.
yeah. So you have to just, it works very well and it did and it created an amazing learning culture.
Yeah.
So everybody did kind of feel like they had this opportunity to figure out what they want to do in life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that, I think, a career where you can do that, quite unheard of, I guess.
It is, yeah, it is. And I think it's a very clear succession planning, mm-hmm. I think, is one of the yeah. points around people. But it's also about taking people from kind of, you know, as you say, they've maybe took that fulfillment job because mm-hmm. that's the role that they can get.
Yeah.
It might have been a uni or something, but actually
yeah.
there's no work available for
absolutely,
them.
Absolutely, yeah.
And how many companies actually go above and beyond to say, actually, let's explore the rest of the marketplace.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
you might have done your degree or whatever experience mm-hmm. in this particular area. Let's get you into that. There's not many companies do that,
mm-hmm.
but I think, and you'll know more, obviously you had to go through that difficult point of redundancies, mm-hmm. but I bet there was a lot of people that left and went to do
that's
completely different jobs.
That's what made me feel at the time that the only thing that gave me some comfort was they'll all be absolutely fine.
Yeah, because you'd done enough, hadn't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, because at that point I was like, they know what they want to do and they're damn good at it now.
Yeah.
So at that point I was like, these guys are going to be fine. Do you
yeah.
know what I mean? I wasn't stressing about that side of things because I knew that I felt like I'd put them on at least a path
yeah.
and help them get onto
help
that
to
path.
Shape the pathway.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think when you see somebody, so I used to work in automotive before I'd had the business, so we had one guy who was an operator, you know, on the line doing the operating, and we thought, oh, he's got some potential, we'll take him, and we trained him as a team leader.
Mm-hmm.
Still kept showing potential and put him as being yeah. a supervisor. And then started getting him a little bit involved in like other areas, mm-hmm. like in automotive, like the quality and delivery and that type of thing. And then when the site closed, mm-hmm. we got to the end of the life cycle, the site closed and he went and did another job. Anyway, fast forward now, 10 years later, he's one of my clients
there
now.
Go,
and he's kind of on the senior leadership team within the business and
brilliant.
Kind of as that operational, senior operational mm-hmm. manager. And it's so lovely. He's mm-hmm. kind of, he's one of the ones that's kind of like touched all the way through, you know, because
yeah.
actually if that opportunity had been missed by us,
yep.
he could have stayed on that pathway of
totally.
Being, you know, and I think given the opportunity, then it's lovely to be able to, he recommended us into the business that we're in there now, and that business, we're doing the full culture challenge with them, and, you know, and that's great to be able to say that, but actually we had a few incidents like that, that kind of came along, and they just kind of make you feel good that you've enabled somebody else to be able to live a life that they didn't know was
possible,
available.
Yeah. It is that, I think, spotting potential and then pushing people out of their comfort zone sometimes. to be able to actually meet that potential. The talent book was really good and it worked, but there is a limit on how far you can take it, I think. And that's what because some people ask for it now. They say, can I have this talent book? I'm like, yes, you can. You're in a copy boat. It has its limits.
And also, it has to have the right progression within a business, doesn't it? Because some smaller businesses don't really have much more progression in, do they?
And you know what? Sometimes it's about understanding what you need from the people and the growth and the scalability of where your business is going to go. It was definitely a good tool for us. Mm-hmm. But I mean, we also, culturally, we kind of sold the culture from day one, even when people were in interviews.
Yeah.
So we had people turn up for an interview, not that bothered, and leave and desperate for the job.
Yeah.
Because we were kind of explaining, you know, we asked questions in the interview. Do you do a skilled one?
Yeah.
Like, I know this is kind of from HR, it's like, really? But for me, I was like, to explain to them, we'd rather you were here at 9:30.
Yeah.
You know, stress-free, not worried, able to drop your kids off. And then if you need to do an hour on a Saturday or whatever it might be to catch up on that, that's fine. So we've always been flexible on working times, always.
Which is so important when people have got lives outside of work.
Totally.
You know, whether it's going to the doctors or whether it's dropping your kids off at school or going to the kids' concert or whatever it may be. Or having older parents that you need to look after and you need to do something with, isn't it? There's so many things that people need to do. So that flexibility, I think, is just kind of, it's invaluable.
I think to me, it should be just necessary because I think, especially when you look at the equality between women and men, that inequality in terms of work, there's no way you're going to get the same opportunity if every business says you need to start at 8:30 or 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
Because children have to go to school.
Yeah.
Who is going to take the child to school?
and systems do fall down. You might have childcare or, you know, my mum used to do it when the kids were younger. But actually, then if she went away on holiday, she used to go away on holiday for like 3.5 weeks in February time. And I used to be working
stuck
8 till 6 and kind of my husband was working. And and then it was kind of actually we had no flexibility in the day to do it. And, and it was a problem.
It is an issue,
but
it's always an issue for the female.
Yes.
So, yeah, don't get me started on that anyway. But no, I think for me that was just very much a given.
A given, yeah.
If we want equality, like, that's a given. Like, you have to be able to work around the fact that we have to get children to school or parents to hospital appointments or, you know, elderly people need looking after, whatever it might be. That's part of this person's life.
Yeah.
We don't just ignore it.
No, and actually a friend of mine who I think you know, Natasha McDonough.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
She said to me, when she'd set the business, which I remember, she said, do I need to write in a contract that people can go to school players and stuff?
I know,
No, we don't. Mm-hmm. You know, just that's a culture that you create. Mm-hmm. And now she laughs at it and says, like, I actually said to her, write in the contract.
Yeah,
and I was
like,
you don't need to, but you've created that without, you know, actually writing it, expressing it. But that's the environment that you wanted the people to work for.
The contracts are funny though, aren't they?
Well, they are. It's difficult.
First contract draft that we got, I should have come here, really, shouldn't I? I didn't know you then. I took so much out.
Yeah.
And they were like, are you sure? I was like, hang on. The maternity thing. So you want me to force somebody to return to work for a certain amount of months or we'll ask them to give money back?
Yeah.
Like, is that a real thing? Like, if they don't want to be here, I don't want them here.
Yeah.
Like, it's quite simple. Like, why would you want somebody there who doesn't want
who
to be
want
there?
Who doesn't want to return, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, that's insane to me.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. It's like basic logical stuff. But I get it as well that, you know, if you've got an organisation of 700 people.
Yeah, then you need to get something back.
There's things that'll, as company sizes get bigger, you become a bit more, I don't know. Question for you then. Why do you think the culture changes so much the more staff that you have?
I think it depends upon where it actually fits, you know. So I think it's difficult across sites, you know, like if you've got different places. But I think it's about who leads that cultural element of it.
Right.
And I think that's when we're talking about kind of what we're classing as the culture challenge is getting the senior leadership teams together to understand what the culture is and then, you know, get the teams involved in actually what do they think the culture is within the business and making sure that that is then is shown and lived and breathed. Because it's all well and good a leadership team saying, well, this is what we think the culture is. And then you talk to the people within the business and they think, that's not what the culture is. Actually, you do this and you do that. They're living and breathing it here, but actually they're not doing enough to be able to make sure it's in the rest of the business. So
it's like teaching the importance of culture to every leader in the business.
It is, yeah.
Every leader.
We talk about consistency all the time. So if it's something like recruitment, we'll make sure that the information that goes out, you know, for the recruitment pack of information is the same as what's built into the handbook. But actually, you know, so the culture is flowed all the way through. But also that when they're doing interview questions, you know that actually if we're interviewing those three people, all the same questions are being asked. Yeah. So the consistency of your approach is right. And that should be, if I'm interviewing, if you're interviewing, if, you know, whoever's interviewing, then that consistency should be there as well. Yeah. So I think there's some real important points that you should really make is through all of the culture. And then inevitably, you know, it doesn't need to make the change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's hard because we've obviously got the clinic as well, which is doing extremely well. So we've just been waiting to scale the clinic for a few years now just because I've been busy
doing other things.
And then I had a little one, I had a baby girl in 2020 as well. So I thought, right, I need to just chill a little bit.
Do the parental thing.
But we're at a point now where it's really grown, it's doing really well. So I've just had to hire some more staff for that, which is great. It took me, literally nearly, so 11 months.
To get the right
of hiring, of literally doing interviews, people who are well overqualified for the role, on paper, but just don't have the right, what I call is like an open mindset.
Yeah,
that fixed mindset thing really just doesn't
work.
Do well with culture for me.
Definitely.
So we finally got two amazing girls in, and I'm like so happy.
But that's one of the conversations we keep on having. It's the hire slow and then fire fast, isn't
it? Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, because actually, if you're hiring slowly and you're making sure that you've got the right person, and we're doing our business at the moment, we've done some recruitment and kind of thought, it's not quite right for what it is that we want and what they want, and kind of taking that and the dynamics that we've got within the team and the culture that we've got, and actually gone back out to advert and felt comfortable enough to be able to do that. And someone said, I know, well, what happens if you haven't recruited someone within the next 2 or 3 months? I said, well, we'll still go back out to advert because it's about getting the right people into the business.
You don't get the right. So that was the main thing for us. And what I also did when we were scaling, and we still do it now, actually, if we are going to hire at all, I don't hire the group hires. That's what I said. Everybody, we'll do a trial day.
Yeah.
And that interviewee will come in and they'll have a full trial day.
All right.
And I'll try and mix them with a few different people throughout the day. And then at the end of the day, when they go, we sit down and I say, what did you think?
Right, okay.
Because to me, that one bad apple, and it just can change the whole culture.
Completely.
So when everybody feels like they're involved in that decision, that really changes everything.
Changes
that. Yeah, so that's really, really been helpful.
And is that with kind of the director level within the business, or is that within kind of your day-to-day?
So the only thing we didn't do that with was board.
Right, okay.
And that was just mainly because some of us had more experience, and I think
to
a certain degree there's a little bit of separation, I guess, there. They don't really have a lot to do with the day-to-day running. Yeah. But every staff member that was kind of working within the team,
it was a group
decision.
But I think that's a real good thing to do, you know, and I think just even to get that trial, so just even my son's nearly 19, and he went on like a trial shift in a bar the other night, and he did 3 hours, you know, and then obviously you go along, you see how you perform, and it's a good taster though, isn't it?
So for me, I used to say to everybody, it gives you the chance to see whether this is the job you want, first of all.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Are you enjoying it? And it also gives us the chance to see whether you fit within our team. Mm-hmm. And I say that from the very beginning. It's harsh and it's a bit brutal to be like, you know,
exposed in such a way, isn't it?
But actually it was really important that they came in and gelled with the team, so I would make that clear in the very beginning.
But it's a very good way of being able to do it, just to kind of get to know people. And I think, as you touched on there before, having the right mindset, people coming in, and it's you'll be able to pick up within that day the conversations that people are having, whether it's a positive, a negative, a kind of.
It was interesting because we'd have some people come for a trial, they would chat to me, and everything would be lovely and positive, and then they'd maybe go and sit next to some of the boxing and labelling crew are in their 70s.
Right.
They're absolutely amazing. They're so quick. They're amazing. And then we'd go and sit next to them and they would start like dishing out orders and stuff and being disrespectful. And, what passes this? Or, well, no, you get that. And I was just like,
that doesn't fit. Yeah.
It really worked well to say, actually, everyone's involved in this decision-making process. So,
So the people that you've got there now, so obviously you've got group there now.
Yes.
So within the group you've got people from, because obviously really you're helping people from a concept idea, aren't you? Within the cosmetics industry, you're taking them from concept idea all the way really through to market, aren't you?
Kind of totally.
So you've got a team of people that's in place there now to be able to enable them to help at each of those stages, is
that? So group, literally, we like kind of looked around and we're like, this person's an expert in this area, this person's an expert in this area. And it was almost like we had these departments that could be entirely different businesses, put it together. We have this group of experts who are really able to give sound advice based on experience as well, which I think is important.
Without a doubt it is,
have been in that space to be able to give that advice and give that really confidently, really well, and just not try and overcomplicate it. Just give the basic kind of advice. And we just thought, actually, that's going to work really well. Just an example, what we started with Westbourne, when we launched stores, which was really fun. Everybody likes to talk about, oh, you launched in Harrods or you launched in Liberty or whatever it might be, which is great. And I hope they don't, like, withdraw from me saying this, but they're not huge money makers. So I have some cosmetics companies that come to us with a concept and I'll say, what's your goal? What's your main
business, do you want it to
KPI or OKR? Where do you want to go with this? And they'll say, I just want to be in Liberty.
Right.
And I go, okay, you're not going to make any money.
Right,
you're not. And, you know, we've had one customer who came to us with a cosmetic who wanted to be in Phoenix, Liberty and Harvey Nicks.
Right.
When they first came to us. We did a full strategy piece. They're now on Amazon and Amazon only.
Right, okay. But that's, people don't know, do
they?
But
they wouldn't have worked.
Yeah.
They wouldn't have worked. And we know that because we know the buyers, we know the margins, we know what they take, we know how long the delivery takes, we know what their terms are.
Yeah.
You know, all of that put together and you have an entirely different business plan to what they think they had in the beginning. So it's definitely been fruitful and helpful for a lot of people already.
Yeah, because you've taken people through a full process, isn't it?
We've skipped years worth of heartache, you know, difficult times and things that they would learn on this journey.
And it's how people find the right people to do it, if it wasn't for...
Oh, honestly.
Which is in essence what happens when you set a business up, isn't it? You've got to look around to be able to think, actually, who can help me do kind of social media? It might be PR, it might be your accountant, your website designer, whatever it may be. You've got to look around and source those things yourself.
The social media side of things has been very interesting because we've got the agency side of group now as well. And the agency runs social media accounts. We don't just do cosmetics for that.
Yeah.
We now expanded into loads of different areas because it's a matchmaking service. We get the best social media people that we think for a specific sector.
Right, okay.
And we matchmake them.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that has been so different and so new for some of our clients. They're like, oh, they understand the language. This new social media person understands the crafting world or whatever it might be, whichever client it is. They're saying this changes everything for them and they would never have found them. And so, yeah, we matchmake a lot.
But I think that's invaluable. And even, you know, I'm kind of 10 years in now and even quite recently I saw somebody and they were setting up and I was like, oh, I'll give them a try to do this. And then it was just a disaster. You still learn these lessons, don't you?
Totally,
you
know,
and kind of think, definitely not going to do that again. You know, kind of, I'm definitely going to be more safeguarded. So you learn these lessons.
And I just don't want people to go through that because we spent a fortune on it. Like,
I was going to say, it's the cost, isn't it? When you think, actually, that's going to cost a couple of £1,000 and then you've been let down by something.
Totally.
You think that you just wasted the money.
Yeah,
you know, that,
it does feel a bit like that. So I think what we've done is we only work with people who we know we'll recommend.
Yeah.
And we know they're good. We know they'll do a good job. So it's we're kind of the middleman, I guess, for the agency, a lot of it. And we do some in-house, but we only work with people who we know are going to give her a good result.
Going to deliver on what it is.
Absolutely. Because we struggled. I remember Googling, like, social media person.
Like, what do you mean,
in
Google,
the cosmetic space. Potentially based in Durham or Newcastle or Sunderland or anywhere in the northeast. Like, this is insane.
Yeah.
Nobody. Zero results.
Zero results.
Oh, good. The cosmetic space is very... down south.
I was going to say, I would imagine very kind of London-based.
It is.
Outside of that, it's kind of you. I would imagine like you're New York and you.
We've gathered some people, though. We have a crew now.
Have you? But that's a perfect example of people don't always need to work on site as well, though, do they?
They don't, no.
Yeah,
and
so
I think
the remote element of it as well.
We work with people up and down the country now, but I'm quite passionate about the northeast. So try and keep as much work up here as I can.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of talent here. And I'm quite passionate about making sure that if we're going to scale businesses and that we scale the northeast, East at the same time.
Yeah. Well, it's about making an impact on the North East, isn't
absolutely.
It? Because actually you want to keep the money here to drive the economy going,
totally.
Doesn't it? And it makes a difference of housing and living and,
absolutely,
you know, spend and shops. And, you know, so it does make that longer term impression. I know I feel the same about, you know, kind of the local area. So you want to make your investment in it to be able to ensure that your business invests, your business puts back into it as well.
We're working with some really great clients at the moment who have most of their cosmetics down south, but they live up here.
Yeah.
And we're like, right, get everything back up here. Everything.
We'll help you do it.
And they're like, we didn't know you existed. I'm like, we do.
Yeah. And now you do know.
So now that you know.
And I think that's one of the big things. And even for us, you know, a HR consultancy, people still don't know that you do what you do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's still companies that kind of say, oh, I've never heard of someone doing that. And we're kind of like, We're singing and talking about it all the time, you know, like, and how do you miss out on those facts that we can help you do things, you know, we can help you make decisions and hold your hand and you do it, or we'll give you the paperwork and you do it, we'll do it. You know, it's those type of conversations that people still just don't always get.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's quite a difficult way around to be able to encourage people to...
Yeah, I think the leadership side of things, like, person who I am, I've always been quite an optimistic, positive person, I think.
Yeah.
Does some people's head in.
I know. It's only the people that are negative. Don't need to worry about them ones.
I know, yeah. But some people are like, oh, I'm like that. This is what you're going to get.
Well, but that's what it's about, isn't it? It's about being positive. So just going to touch back on culture because I want to say some random words here and you can explain it.
Okay.
Go on then. So I saw on LinkedIn the other day, there was a treadmill, there was a rabbit, and there was somebody running on it and it was a desk. Do you want to explain that a little bit more?
So we do have quite a bit of fun in the office, to the point where one of our lovely staff members has rabbits. She keeps rabbits.
Okay.
We've got a big WhatsApp group, everything's done in there. She texts one night, Kimmy, she was called Kimmy. I named her, obviously. She's I'm actually not that fan. Just at the time, I didn't think I'd see the rabbit again. So she says, oh, can I bring the baby rabbit in tomorrow? I was like, absolutely, yeah. So she brought it in a pen.
Uh-huh.
At the same time, we were talking about how we never get our steps in. So we'd created a treadmill desk.
Right.
And that was it. Becca, who is a full-time mum, she's got two kids. She's got a three-year-old, Jane's nine now. And she works pretty much full-time for us as well.
Right.
She's busy.
Uh-huh.
But I was like, this is just the normal kind of amount that a working man would take on. Because you have to do this at home all the time. So have your comfort with the bunny and, like, get your emotional needs fixed.
Uh-huh.
Also get your steps in. Also do your emails. So we put it on LinkedIn. I think it was a few funny comments saying 2023 is getting ridiculous. I was like, no, this is the normal working mom life. This is what we have to juggle.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Trying to juggle it all.
So, we sometimes get the bunnies in now because it's fun and they're dead, like, placid. She's got them very well trained.
Right, okay.
They just sit and have a cuddle.
Oh, they're just sitting and just chill out.
But the office, we've got a tree in the office and swings and all sorts of...
You've got all sorts of things going on.
And we sometimes, this is how, the culture is that nice in there. We sometimes will... So we've got our Christmas night. We're having it in the office.
All right, okay. Just because it's a nice place.
After. But it's a really nice space. And everyone's really comfortable there. The girls come in pretty much their joggers every day of the time, especially if they're doing fulfillment. It's just a nice vibe and everyone feels quite at home there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's nice. It's nice. But we love our bunny snuggles now.
And I even just like the idea of the walking desk, really.
Do you know what? It's really good for getting your emails and your steps done at the same time.
Yeah, I think I could do it. Because I often, if I'm working from home, or if I'm working from home just for like an hour before I'm going to go out to some client sites, I'll just stand in the kitchen.
We can get 3 miles done.
Oh, just
doing
the
emails.
And that's good to catch up on your emails.
Well, we've said if you're going to go on, you have to do it 3 miles at least.
Right.
Otherwise, we're going to shout at you.
So you're focusing on the fitness and wellbeing at the same time, isn't it?
It's good. I think we've got, even just music playing and, like, sometimes we'll stop and have a bit of a boogie and stuff. It just feels like a group of friends.
Yeah.
It's a really good vibe. Uh-huh. And I think sometimes we also have a room that we keep separate for... It's a prayer, meditation, or cry room. We call it cry room sometimes. But sometimes you can just take yourself off and have a little space to yourself if everything's a bit overwhelming.
Yeah.
We also eat lunch together every day.
Oh, do you?
Everybody stops all at once and we all eat lunch together.
And you all eat lunch
every day.
Together.
Yeah, and I'm quite strict on that.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Nope, stop what you're doing. Come and have lunch with us.
Right.
I want to hear about yesterday and we talk about each other's lives.
Right, okay.
Because otherwise, how do you know who you're sitting next to?
Well, you don't do. Because you're busy. Know. No. And you don't always ask those questions.
And you don't know. Sometimes it comes out, people are going through something at the dinner table.
Yeah. Because that's where they feel comfortable to share, isn't it?
Well, they're just, it's at that point they're like, are you doing, how are you doing, how's things? And then they'll start sharing. And
yeah.
You're more aware of what's going on in the team's life. And
yeah.
It's nice. It's
well, that
nice.
Makes an impact, and I think people, employees, appreciate the fact that that time is given to them as well. Yeah. You know, I think especially if you're the one pushing to say,
yeah,
right, come on, everybody have lunch together. Yeah. At least it's all pushing at the same time.
I think, yeah, they know that that's kind of just like part of the day.
Part of the day, yeah.
When our staff member who we just hired recently joined, she was like, do you just stop every day and do lunch together? And I was like, yep. Like at school.
Yeah. Because you're like,
I was shocked. Do people not do that?
No, I don't think so. No. So
no,
we don't, but we're generally not in the office together, really.
Yeah.
So,
no, honestly, it works really well.
No, I just think it's quite a nice thing. Mm-hmm. One of our clients does have that. They don't do it all at the same time, but they're doing like a free lunch now.
Oh, right, nice.
So, yeah, so they kind of, people go downstairs and it's all done quite cool, like a nice vibe and stuff in there.
Yeah.
And people can go down and put their food order in and they can sit together and eat lunch, nice. but it's all free. So oh, they wow, did that nice. As kind of on the back of like cost of living and just trying to help people out a little bit more. You know, they've got people who are just above kind of minimum wage earners, and I think that's quite a nice
really
thing.
Nice.
And then people are getting the opportunities to be able to sit in there and, you know, kind of mix with different people in the business. And they have about 50 people, I think they've got.
Yeah.
But they know they're making a difference to people from a financial point of view. You know, things whether you're buying food at home and bringing it in, it still costs money, doesn't it? So
we've done loads of stuff. We tried the benefits system once, where we did a full benefits booklet, where we paid for people's Netflix or their whatever it might be, and that was nice. And in the end, I just uplifted everybody's wages.
Yeah.
They were like, we don't want the faff on. Like, and then I just said, right, okay, we're just going to give you, everybody's going to have an uplift.
Yes.
And you can do it that way.
And then you can do it that way. Rather than say, I want Netflix, I want the gym.
Yeah, exactly. Because we were paying for flower subscriptions and coffee subscriptions and all sorts of random stuff. But they got to pick what they wanted. It was just, they didn't like the paperwork side of things, so.
Just keep it simple, give everyone the extra money, then do what they want instead, so. So just kind of as we're talking through there, we've talked about the business itself and how it's changed, obviously, from kind of where you are and what you are now and kind of the focus of it's changed there. And obviously, some of your people, you remained within the business, obviously, unfortunately, had to make some people redundant. So the people that were in the business, did you then have to, like, reevaluate the people that were in there and the roles that they were doing? How did you?
So, yeah, it was quite a straightforward structure because the business itself needed to shift. So we went from being very heavily direct-to-consumer as a brand, and then, you know, it's been such a weird, like, 4 years because we had COVID, then we had cost of living. And it's not, no, you can't do a year-on-year comparison for sales. Like, nobody in beauty is able to do that at the moment. So we kind of shifted everything from B2C to B2B.
Right, okay.
So we found people were going into stores more. People were wanting to go into shops again. Previous to that, it was all COVID. Everything was online. So we scaled the business based on everything being fixed online.
Okay, yeah.
And then when the consumer behaviour changed, it was, okay, we need to focus on B2B.
Right.
So some of that team that focused on that, that's where some of those redundancies came from. They genuinely just weren't needed in that role.
Yeah.
We weren't focusing on B2C hugely anymore. And we still don't.
Yeah.
We kind of got that to a point where it does its thing, and we have a small team now doing that.
Right.
And the rest of the team focus on B2B.
Right.
So their roles who do the B2B, but their roles slightly changed, but we eventually got some new people in to focus on that specific area.
Right.
With, you know, we headhunted for that.
Yeah.
Because it was a skill that we needed within that industry.
Was that just a case of you actually knew that that was the role that it was going to be that you needed, or that was where you saw kind of the gap within the team that
we
you had?
We just knew that the B2C versus B2B shift was going to happen.
Yeah.
We could foresee it happening, and we knew it was going to happen. And that was, I think, for us, some of those business decisions to keep the business moving and flowing at the direction that we needed it to go in.
Yeah.
We had to just make those decisions. So, it was not so fun and scary. But it worked.
It worked.
And I think, you know, even recently we've just launched Fenix.
Right.
Like, we didn't really focus on B2B previously. Fenix took every single product that for Westbourne. Whereas, you know, normally people are like, oh, we want soap brows, we want extra strong, we want the mist. Phoenix were very much like, we want every single product. Right. We want them all. And that B2B shift is very clear and very obvious now right. for us. So mm-hmm. kind of glad we did what we did because...
At the time that you did it,
Yeah, because mm-hmm. that pattern that we predicted definitely happened.
Yeah.
So we focus much more on B2B now.
Mm-hmm. And then it's about just making sure that you've got the right employees to be able to
yeah, so I think the team are exceptional at what they do. It's, mm-hmm. you know, even fulfillment and B2B fulfillment, like Jessie who does that for us, she's insanely quick.
Yeah.
We just couldn't get anybody to do it as quick as her brain mm-hmm. now goes. She's done right. this for 7 years or something right. from the very beginning. And she's just insanely, insanely quick and exceptionally thorough.
Yeah.
And you just don't have to worry about it at all with that. Mm-hmm. She's got everything covered and she now does that, not just Westbourne. So she was ready to be chucked like 4 or 5 brands.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So it was very much those people were kind of experts in their areas.
Yeah. I think the important thing that you've said throughout really is it's you value your employees.
Oh, yeah.
The people that are working within the business, you appreciate yeah. the skill set that they've got. Mm-hmm. You can develop and, you know, nurture them to be, you know, oh, if totally. They want to be something else. But mm-hmm. actually you nurture them as they are within the roles that they're delivering on as well.
Totally, so, yeah. yeah. Oh, I absolutely love them a bit.
But that's valuable, you know, invaluable really, isn't it? Yeah. So people coming into the business kind of understand that culture and then mm-hmm. where they fit into the culture.
I think it's genuine care.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You have to have genuine care. Otherwise, it's people can see right through it. That's what it is. It's genuine care.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
So, probably just rounding off a little bit, what would be your biggest piece of advice for a business owner or a manager when they're hiring new people when we're talking about culture?
2 things. I would say hire slowly, like mm-hmm. what you've just said there. Don't just fill a hole. Don't be like, I'm just going to put a band-aid over that and get somebody in to do it. Think about scalability at all times and whether this person's going to be able to manage and cope with that. Do a trial day.
Yeah, trial day. I love that idea. Yeah.
Do a trial day every single time. Mm-hmm. And the third thing with that is get the whole team involved in the decision.
Yeah.
Whoever's going to be working with that person, get their opinion and advice on yeah. whether they think they can work with that person as well. We do a lot of insights, behaviours and, you know, yeah. psychological, behavioural yeah. patterns so that people recognise and that the team recognises you're not just hiring another yellow and that doesn't mm-hmm. mean that they don't get on because it's another yellow. So they recognise all of that as well. And I think yeah. if you had that, get everybody involved.
Well, I like that. I like all of what you've just said there because I think it's just all invaluable. I think that, mm-hmm. that for me, one of the big things is the dynamics of the team. You yeah. know, as you say, get the person that's going to be working with involved because actually those dynamics are... so important.
Totally, yeah. It changes.
If there's a clash, just...
It changes everything. It changes everything.
One person can change a whole working environment.
Entirely, yeah.
So I think it's so important to do what you've just said. So where can our listeners learn more about you?
So for group in general, we have a website, sb1group.com, and that's currently getting revamped, so I'm looking forward to that. I also post quite a bit on LinkedIn, mm-hmm. Kimberly Catton, and I'm also on Instagram, Kimberly C. Catton, and that's more behind-the-scenes stuff of just... business life and bunnies and treadmills.
And walking while you're doing your emails.
yeah. There's a little bit more about clinics. So I do talk about the clinic side of things quite a bit. So I've got quite a bit of skincare advice and mm-hmm. product advice, makeup advice,
yeah.
all on the Instagram as well. That's on LinkedIn.
Well, that's great. Thank you very much. I really appreciate you coming in for a conversation today. Thank you very much for listening to the Real World HR podcast and a massive thank you to Kimberly for joining us today. It's been a really great chat. You can find more information about the things that we've discussed on this episode in the show notes. Subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss out on any future episodes and please do leave us a review and rating. Real World HR, putting the human back into HR. HR is so instrumental in shaping, reinforcing and changing an organisation's culture. Take our HR health check quiz to assess the efficiency of your HR operations and uncover areas for improvement. We'll then share key actions and steps you can implement to ensure you're legally compliant, supporting your employees and managers, and supporting your business. It just takes 2 minutes and it's completely free. Head down to the show notes for the link.